OTB
AM. Thanks to Screwfix.ie, championing the trade with a dedicated call centre.
And I'm delighted to say Gregor Paul is on the line. Gregor, good morning to you. How are you doing?
Yeah, very well, thanks.
Welcome to Ireland. How's your stay been so far?
Wonderful. You can't go wrong in Ireland. Good country.
And how has your welcome been, given that you've been accusing the IRFU of being coldly cynical and scouring the earth to try and find some rugby players vaguely fit enough to wear the green jersey?
I think I've probably won a few friends here in Ireland. Lots of people have sent me some nice emails about that. Not.
Can you give us a flavour of some of the emails? Because the New Zealand Herald helpfully put your email address at the top of the written piece. Look, here's the thing, right? A lot of Irish people actually legitimately agree with you and do wonder about what our policy has been and what's been at the root of our policy. But I'm interested to see what the response is like when you write a piece like that.
Look, there's a couple of points to make that are worthwhile. People move around the world, and there's lots of guys who are dual eligible. They've got heritage, or they come to a country and they've lived here for long enough that they take on board everything about that country. So that's not really the issue around eligibility that I was trying to get at. The story about maybe Jared Payne, Bundy Ekie, and I think there's a few others that have gone to Connacht. I mean, this is a different kind of recruitment, though, isn't it? This is actually looking at pre-prepared professional players, guys like Bundy Ekie, who, I mean, he wasn't really that close to being an All Black, but he wasn't that far away either. And, you know, that's about a succession planning or using other people's development work and investment and then picking up those guys and knowing that in 3 years' time, you might need a midfielder and Bundy Ekie might be the guy that fits the bill. So that's a wee bit different to some of the emails that I've been getting, which are talking a lot about the Pacific Island situation in New Zealand, which, look, there's a lot of Pacific Island lads that come over when they're 14, 15, they're given scholarships to schools, or they come over with their family, or they're sent over to board with an uncle. And they don't come to be All Blacks. They're not recruited by the All Blacks with a view that in 5 years' time they're going to be in the All Black team. They're coming to school. You know, they're coming to get an education. They're coming to live in New Zealand. And it just so happens that there's guys like Waisaki Noholo, Vaia Fifita, who both of whom came to school in New Zealand and decided to stay. Malachi Fekitoa, he'd be another one. They're not recruited by the New Zealand Rugby Union with a view to being All Blacks. They just come to live in New Zealand. They turn out to be quite good at rugby. And through hard work, discipline, they end up being good enough to be All Blacks. And therefore, they commit to being All Blacks in New Zealand rather than playing for Tonga or Fiji or Samoa, whichever one of the island teams that they're qualified for.
And so you see a fundamental difference in that. It kind of seems that it's not as overtly cynical, but that ultimately offering a 15-year-old who shows that athletic prowess the potential to come and play rugby on a scholarship, like everybody knows where that goes if you're good enough. It's not like it's, you know, you can't not be dangling the All Black carrot ahead of them. And because there's such a succession of players who have come from the islands, it seems that this is all kind of part of the same. You know, there's degrees of cynicism.
I kind of agree, but I think there's too many steps removed, to be honest. The New Zealand Rugby Union has to be honest enough and say that it is a beneficiary of recruitment policies of schools and clubs and provinces, because they go out and they find kids that they want to come and be educated at their place. But you're a long way removed from finding a 14-year-old, you know, a 15-year-old Waisaki Noholo, who, you know, it's pretty hard to be an All Black. You know, they're really not being recruited at that age to be All Blacks, because there's 25 other kids already in New Zealand who are going to be good enough or nearly good enough to be All Blacks as well. So I don't think you can compare it quite in the same way. I take your point. Well, at the end of the pyramid, at the top of the pyramid, the All Blacks benefit somewhere along the way from immigration coming in and that kind of recruitment, but it's not as overt or as direct as sort of, you know, picking up an already gifted professional player.
I guess we're not defenders of the IRFU here by any stretch of the imagination, but there's a lot of players who don't make it who come over on a professional contract. So Jake Heenan was one, for example, that people would have had high hopes for when he came over. I think he captained the Baby Blacks, is that right, as an under-20? I'm not quite sure, but...
So,
He was good enough.
Yeah, I think you're right.
He was good enough to play underage. And he came and there was high hopes that he was going to make it as a back rower at international level, but he just didn't make it. So it's not a million miles away from somebody deciding to move countries at 15 for an education, deciding to move countries to try and play professionally, and you either make it to the highest level of the game or you don't. I wonder, look, we're talking nuances here, really, and the rules as they are have been changed to kind of dilute the amount of players that we're going to see who qualify under the 3 years. Obviously, that doesn't happen anymore. Do you fundamentally believe that it cheapens international rugby? Or, because there is a counter-argument that actually having more good players playing international rugby makes the game better, and ultimately, the relative health of the international game is the one thing, the one shining light that rugby has at the moment.
No, I don't. I think it does cheapen the international game away. But if you look at French club rugby, I mean, they can go out and recruit whoever they feel like, and they're kind of multinational teams. Like Toulon have got players from everywhere, don't they? So I don't think the international rugby should become like that. You know, and I don't think, I think the sad part for me, and people can judge whatever they like about this, but Bundy didn't grow up dreaming of playing for Ireland. You know, you go down to Munster or here in Leinster, I'm sure that every young Irish kid who's into rugby is dreaming that one day he's going to put that green jersey on. And Bundy grew up in Auckland, dreaming that he was going to be, hopefully going to be an All Black. And he had that dream probably right up until his early 20s. You know, he would have sat in the bar with his mates at one point, watched the All Blacks playing Ireland, hoping that the All Blacks were going to beat them. And I think that's a wee bit different when we get into this kind of territory, guys. And Brad Shields would be the same last week. And I know that his heritage is different. His mum and dad born and bred in England and emigrated. And I know that he felt close to being English. But, you know, he was offered an All Black jersey in this time last year, which he'd been chasing for, 26, 27 years. And the timing was awkward because he just signed his contract with Wasps.
Yeah.
But, you know, he had 27 years of wanting to be an All Black. And then 12 months after being offered an All Black jersey, he's actually playing against them.
Yeah. And look, I can see how that would stick in the craw. But surely those 15-year-olds leaving Fiji dreamt of playing for Fiji who are now playing for the All Blacks.
And I would say that's probably true as well, and that's a sad part of the Pacific issue. But there's something else tied in a little bit behind that. I mean, a different sort of story altogether. But some of these Pacific lads that leave their country, I mean, they're there to earn money. You know, I mean, if you've ever been to the islands, and you know how little some of these guys have. So when they get the chance to play for the All Blacks, they're a wee bit torn. They love to play for Fiji, but you know, they can earn so much money playing for the All Blacks, and they send it back to mum and dad and granny and granddad and whoever. You know, and they change their lives. And you know, you've got to be a wee bit careful about judging people for that, because, you know, the amount of money that Malachi Fekitoa, for instance, he earned being an All Black, he's one of 15 kids. You know, so he could send his father died when he was young, so his mum's trying to bring up 15 children. Can you imagine doing that? And, you know, so he becomes an All Black rather than playing for Tonga, because the amount of money he can earn changes his family's life.
Yeah, and look, I totally understand from their perspective, but that's quite cynical from the All Blacks, really, isn't it? Going to the islands and recruiting 15-year-olds and saying, look, we can offer you, and some of them don't make it.
But that's the point, though. The All Blacks are not going to the islands.
The funnel of All Black rugby is, though.
There are some schools in New Zealand which have got sort of religious links with the islands, and they're offering them scholarships to come to school. But you were a million miles away from the All Blacks going to the islands or having anything to do with that. You know, Malachi came through as a 15-year-old who came to school in Auckland because he got given the chance when he was spotted by Wesley. So there's a completely different issue in New Zealand about the ethics of schools.
Yeah.
Doing that, but that's around education. I think we're crazy if we're starting to talk about the All Blacks having a recruitment policy that's cynically going out to the islands and bringing in 15-year-olds, because the All Blacks have got players coming out of their ears, and New Zealand's got kids based in New Zealand. They do not need to go to the islands to pick their team. The schoolboys are doing that, the schools are doing it, and that's a completely different issue, though.
Just one question on the game before we let you go, Gregor. Johnny Sexton's been speaking about 2016, specifically the game in Dublin, saying that the All Blacks showed him plenty of respect that day. And I guess what he means is that they hit high, they hit late, they hit violently on a couple of occasions. Do you expect similar tensions to rise this Saturday evening?
Well, I think the All Blacks would tell you that they probably made a mistake in that game, in that they reacted to the defeat in Chicago with a kind of all-out physical assault, if I could put it that way. And they made a mistake in that they didn't trust the totality of the game. They wanted to come to Ireland and win. And instead of using the speed of movement, their offloading, their creativity to take on Ireland, they kind of got a bit red misty, didn't they? And it was a brutal game. I think we should be fair and say that, you know, Ireland gave as good as he got. There were a couple of collisions in there that were fairly
not really
memorable. I think the game was tainted a little bit by Malachi Sekitoa not being sent off. I mean, he should have been. There's no doubt about that. And then there was a Sam Kane incident earlier in the game, which to my view was genuinely accidental rather than anything, but it was nasty to look at. It was unpleasant. And then throw in all the other collisions, it was a wee bit. I think the All Blacks made a mistake with their approach in that game, and I don't think they'll do that this time round. I think they'll be a bit more level-headed. I think they'll be a bit more controlled, and if they play like that this time round, I'm sure there will be red cards. So they'll have to be a little bit more disciplined than they were last time.
Gregor, enjoy the game, whatever happens in the rest of your stay in Dublin. Thanks a million, man.
Thank you. Cheers.
Bye. But, Gregor Paul there. From the New Zealand Herald, you can read his comment piece yesterday under the headline, Flags of Convenience, the Irish Tactic Harming World Rugby. And I think a lot of people would broadly agree with the fact that Ireland have been fairly cynical in using the residency rules. I think a lot of people will probably find quite an equivalence between what the rugby schools in New Zealand are doing on behalf of New Zealand rugby and what Ireland are doing. Because, like, if you go to a mother who has 15 kids and say, we're going to give your child a boarding school education at one of the poshest rugby schools in New Zealand, she's not going to say no. And the rugby nation can't say, no, you can't do that. You can't better your life and the life of all your families. But the net result is that all the best young players are then available to New Zealand rugby forever.
But of course, the All Blacks are not responsible for this whatsoever. If they just happen to have a school system that's so unbelievably competitive and has resources that they're able to go and recruit from all the Pacific Islands, well, that's just a coincidence. And if they happen to become All Blacks one day, well, so be it.
If the IRFU offers students in the Pacific Island Nations education here, does that make it okay? Asks Isil Cody. Hashtag OTBAM. I mean, you can just see the head recruiter at St. Michael's and Belvedere going, I'm just going down to the Pacific Islands and we're setting up a little school, a little primary school there with a rugby coaching and a good solid religious education. I mean, that is all a little bit screwed up.
That would be one hell of a battle, just to actually go down and set up a Black Rock or a St. Michael's in Fiji or Samoa. Say, right, we're going to take you on, New Zealand.
Yeah.
Where are these kids going to go?
But that's what the French are doing at the moment. The French are bringing 15, 16, 17-year-olds over. And, like, so if you're Toulon, or if you're, so it's Toulon doing it, right? But it's not the French Rugby Football Union.
No.
They're like, we disagree with what you're doing. Keep doing it.
Well, I'm not actually sure if that's the case. I think that that's what they should be doing, because that's what the All Blacks are doing. I think the French Football Federation needs to actually wise up and look at what's actually going on in their club rugby and saying, how can we maneuver this in a way that benefits our national team? And it's that exact thing.
But I mean, that's what they've done. And they're, if you look at the French team, there's a lot of names in there that, you know, wouldn't be the traditional, stereotypical French rugby playing farmers. Not Pacific Islanders, basically.
It is true.
OTB
AM. Thanks to Screwfix.ie. Championing the trade with a dedicated call centre.